Like the rest of the pond life down here on planet Earth, I'm grateful to Uncle Sam for launching his satellites, so we can produce pinpoint navigational accuracy with only the most rudimentary of skills. Despite this obligation to technology, however, I can't help feeling a deep sadness as my ocean sailing experience is impoverished in proportion to the benefits of GPS. Every year I examine a number of candidates for the Ocean Yachtmaster certificate. Most have learned a smattering of celestial navigation in order to qualify. It's obvious from some of the results that there's no serious intent to pursue the art, and I understand why. The last time I crossed the Atlantic, I only took my sextant out of the box once. In the dead of one remarkable night, the moon was pouring out enough light to give me a horizon, and there was the pole star, shining through the blaze, low in the northern sky at the tail of the Little Bear. I knew my latitude without it, of course, but the extraordinary beauty of the scene demanded that I associate with my surroundings more profoundly than by merely staring at them. By measuring the height of Polaris with my 1942 instrument, I'd performed one of the greatest mysteries that's ever been available to man. You don't have to be specially clever to manage the maths, and using the sextant is a simple skill that anyone with eyes and a steady hand can master. Yet as I adjusted the micrometer and watched the image of the star kiss the edge of the moon milky sea, I was in direct touch with the heavens. The body I was sighting on was of an immensity that dwarfs anything in our locality, and even as I watched it, it was marching with unimaginable velocity away from me at a distance I cannot begin to comprehend. Sure, I can put numbers to such things, but once the digits have gone beyond our own experience, there are no more than rows of figures. I can't imagine a single light year, let alone hundreds. Yet by connecting to such stars through my sextant, I can fix my position to a mile or two on my tiny planet as it swims with its burning sisters around an unexceptional sun in a backwater galaxy. We can still use celestial navigation, of course, and it's handy to run off a series of sunsights for an examination, but so long as we know where we are by courtesy of GPS, the magic will never be the same again. We can't turn back the clock, however. Electronics are here to stay, and I of all people realise this. So what's this column all about? Astronavigation depends on the sun for the absolute time which is its lifeblood. No time, no longitude is the essential rule. When the issue of longitude was foremost in the minds of every mercantile nation, it just so happened that the problem was solved in England, and that the Astronomer Royal had set up shop in Greenwich. The final arbiter of time had to be Earth's relationship to the heavens, and it was to their movements that everything was set. Inconveniently, the Earth doesn't spin at a perfect rate, so time was adjusted accordingly. It all came right in about a year, so no problems were caused, and the navigation tables took it into account. Man needed time to run at an even rate for daily business, however, so the anomalies were ironed out into a mean progress of the spheres. Because for the purposes of navigational time the day was measured from noon at Greenwich, the time standard became known as Greenwich Mean Time. Not all the nations were thrilled about this. France had hoped for the accolade, but the meridian of Greenwich was largely accepted as the prime meridian from which longitude and time would be measured, and so things remained. A century or three later, computers and their offspring were struggling to cope with any variations in the tick of the clock, and a super precise measuring system took over from the sun. Every second, the cesium-133 atom emanates precisely 9,192,631,770 oscillations of radiation at ground state. Phew. This became the universally accepted means of defining time. The name GMT was set aside in favour of Universal Time, UT, and loud was a cheering in Paris. Unfortunately for supporters of this otherwise perfect arrangement, our dear old Earth is slowing down. Not a lot, but enough to throw the atomic clocks out by a second or so every 4 years. So far, the answer has been to insert a leap second on New Year's Eve when needed, but now the wolves are howling to scrap the leap second and allow the official time of noon to drift steadily away from Greenwich. By my calculations, it'll be in Paris in about 500 years, giving the French what they always wanted, before it drifts ever onwards towards the wastes of Russia. The Americans like the idea. So do the Germans, the Italians, and, of course, our neighbours across the Channel. We in Britain, however, are fighting to save not only Greenwich as the prime meridian, but also the concept of time, and hence our own little lives, being tied to the universal truth of the sun and the stars. Never mind if a stand against the atoms upsets a few mobile phone and software companies, say I. If a plebiscite were to be offered, I hope that all freeborn sailors, be they ancient or modern, will stand up and be counted.